So for me, one of the most important skills for anybody to learn is really effective, really good storytelling. How do you have a narrative arc? How do you paint a picture for people about how an individual situation relates to a broader theory or a trend? How do you capture emotion and imagination rather than just communicating facts and data?
Hi, and welcome to Lead Well. Hi, and welcome, Andrew. Andrew, you are an executive coach, a communications leader, and the author of Honestly Speaking, How the Way We Communicate Transforms Leadership, Love, and Life. You bring deep experience from senior roles in employee communications and cultures at Meta and Johnson & Johnson. And now you work globally with leaders and high-performing teams navigating change. And I guess everyone is going through a lot of change at this time. You also are a longtime practitioner and teacher of yoga and meditation. And you're integrating mindfulness into leadership communication in a way that's practical, grounded, and very relevant, of course, for today's organizations. So, how about we explore how leaders can communicate with clarity and authenticity and also presence, especially when things are uncertain and uncomfortable like there are today? Welcome again, Andrew.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for that kind introduction, and I'm happy to join you.
Wonderful. Now you have an interesting combination that I'm seeing more and more between mindfulness and yoga and leadership. And when I think back to my days in corporate, a lot of the executives started to practice yoga. And at the end of the day, I always felt that their goal was to do a bit of mindfulness and some yoga so that they could be even more productive and spend more hours working. And it felt like it was, a way to increase productivity. So what's your take on that? What do you see there?
I love that. And I actually think that I think about it a little bit differently, which is, and I've been teaching for a while and practicing for a lot longer. And of course, I share what my teachers have taught me to the best of my ability. So I don't hold myself out as the total expert in this. But what I have noticed is that many of the people that I teach tend to come to yoga first as a means for like stress reduction. And it's really about like the physical body. They're like, I just want to get more flexible. I'm really stressed out. I feel like yoga is calming. And I think that's great. And what you realize as you get a little bit more into it is that's maybe 5% of what the broader yoga tradition is actually all about and what it can teach us. And so, one of the beautiful things about a yoga class in a modern sort of householder situation or in modern settings is that becoming more in touch with your body helps you to understand yourself and regulate the ups and downs a little bit more. And so that's the sort of stress reduction piece. But I think the more interesting thing for leadership is that it isn't just how do I reduce stress and then therefore perhaps be more productive, maybe, but really it's about how do I see more of myself in other people? How do I see other people in me? And so to me, leadership is really all about how do I motivate and inspire people to follow me when they have the choice not to. And I do that through a variety of ways, but how do I really connect with people in a more human, more authentic, grounded way, being myself? A lot of times I think I work with leaders who feel like they need to communicate as it's like a presentation or a performance. And yoga teaches us that's actually what we're trying to strip away so that we're just more fully ourself.
More fully ourselves. And you also made a great point right now that I come across more and more that we're all different. And as leaders, we need to be aware of that, first of all, and then take that into account. So let's talk more about your approach to communication because I know that's your forte.
I think it actually roots in a lot of what we were just talking about, which is you have to really think if you're trying to communicate with somebody, anything that's worth communicating is worth communicating because you want them to know or to feel or to do something. And so, how do you do that? You have to really know your audience. You have to try to connect with them. I think we've all been on the receiving end of a communication, whether it's a presentation or an email or a Slack message, where it feels like corporate, or it feels like it was written by somebody else, or it feels very stilted and it doesn't feel connected, it doesn't feel human. The best communicators understand and know their audience. They speak to their audience and they understand, how do I really bring them along with me? And the other thing is, they really are honest with themselves again around, what do I want my audience? What do I want Christine? What do I want Andrew to know or to feel or to do? And then you can be more conversational about it. So I sometimes advise people, don't have a script so much as you have a plan. Have done the work on yourself. Really be honest. What are you trying to convey? Especially if it's a hard conversation or it's a complex topic, make sure that you've really done the work for yourself around, what do I really want the end outcome of this conversation to be? And how might I get the audience that I'm speaking to? What might motivate them? What kind of information or context might they need to hear? How might I, my style, inform how they might receive what I'm trying to get them to receive? So it's really a much more of a sort of a coaching, navigational, conversational approach to communication, rather than a lot of times we'll start by thinking, I need to get something out of my head or get something off my chest and push it out into the world, without doing the work of, it's actually a relational, it's a relational exercise.
Yeah, making sure that we first think about the audience and who they are and what
Audience.
they are driven by and what the values are. That's a really good point. Another point that I wanted to get your thoughts on is that many of my leadership coaches at this point, they are pretty worried and also frustrated because they get a message from top management they are not at all agreeing to, and they have to communicate that down to their employees, to their associates. So, what's your take on that position, this middle manager sandwich position, especially when there is communication coming their way that they don't really agree with 100%?
I think it's a moment of truth for all leaders and managers. And I've both been in that position, and I now coach people all the time who are in that position. And so I understand, and I have both sympathy and empathy for how that can be challenging. And I think it's a moment of truth. And so, inevitably, in any organization, we all have to make a choice of, is it more or less? Is the majority of what I'm communicating and the majority of what I'm doing aligned with an organization's values? Even if I'm not going to agree, because you're never going to agree 100% with everything that the company is doing, that the nonprofit is doing, that you work for, doesn't matter. But generally, do I feel like I can get on board with the majority of it? And part of what a good leader is, somebody who helps people see how their work every day relates to the broader focus and the mission of the organization. And that's what the middle manager is really meant to do. You're a communicator, helping inspire and motivate people. So again, you can want to do it in a way that doesn't undermine trust and credibility in the organization, but also doesn't undermine trust for you. So I like to say, hey, this is what we're hearing from the company. This is what those facts are. And you can communicate it in a pretty factual way. I would resist the urge to editorialize and say, here's what the company says, but I totally disagree with it, because you're undermining, for people who might be below you, who actually might agree with it, you've just lost some truth and credibility, trust and credibility with them. Just because people report to you doesn't mean that they're always going to agree with you 100% of the time. So I would much rather work for somebody and work with somebody who I feel like is an honest broker, who's just factual. Again, we talked about that yoga part, evening the ups and the downs a little bit. And then also, you think, what are the moments of truth when I so disagree with this, I have to speak up, or I have to leave the company, or I have to leave this job? I think we all have to just be clear for ourselves around, where are those lines? What does that mean for you? And if for everybody, it's different. That's why I love the coaching work that I do, because it's different for every person. But I just think being an honest, even fair broker is really the best way, because that really long term builds trust and credibility. I always think about, we could win every battle or fight every battle if we want, but what we're really interested in is a long term relationship. So, how do I preserve trust and credibility over time, given that I'm not going to always agree or even win every battle? That's really not the main focus.
Yeah, and also I lose credibility towards my management if I'm
Yeah.
I know, disagreeing openly. So what else is it that you're seeing in coaching these days, and how has that changed from the previous years?
I started coaching, oh boy, about 8 or 9 years ago, and I've coached both outside and then also back inside of an organization. And this was before the pandemic. So obviously through that, a lot has changed about how people find meaning in work. This pendulum keeps swinging back and forth between who has more power. Is it the bosses or the employees and organizations? But what I think right now is a lot of people are just experiencing an immense amount of uncertainty. And we are uncertain about the state of the world, about the state of the economy and economic forces and winds that are going in lots of different directions. Companies are at once rapidly hiring, and then the hiring job market is really tough, and there are companies that are still laying people off. So it's hard for people to predict. And so a lot of what I work on with people is trying to think about how do I find groundedness in my own values and in what is really important to me? How can I mine my previous experience for facts, knowledge, wisdom that is useful to me in no matter what professional setting I'm in? And so that's why I really think, a lot of the work around storytelling and communication and how do you inspire and inform people is so important, because that isn't going to change. The context might change. Even with some of the AI tools that people use increasingly for communication, it's still not great at telling really human, really good connected stories. And so we still need people who have the capacity to do that. So it's navigating uncertainty, trying to figure out how do I find more meaning in work and life in a balanced way that feels, again, that balance for me. And then how do I really communicate in a way, lead and inspire teams through change? That's really what I'm working on a lot with the clients that I work with now.
So I heard storytelling as well.
Yeah, for sure. I think that storytelling is one of those innately, inherently, really powerful human things. One of the things that separates humans from other species. And if you think about how human knowledge has evolved, it really is always has been rooted in stories and storytelling. The whole yoga tradition, for example, it was an oral tradition. It was passed for thousands of years around the stories, the mantras, some of the best novels and stories, the stories that are on the books behind me. Those are all through words and storytelling. Political campaigns are successful when we attach humans and emotions to facts and policies, right? Really good branding, marketing exercise is really about storytelling. So for me, one of the most important skills for anybody to learn is really effective, really good storytelling. How do you have a narrative arc? How do you paint a picture for people about how an individual situation relates to a broader theory or a trend? How do you capture emotion and imagination rather than just communicating facts and data?
I like this idea of making sure that the others can create a picture in their mind. I think that's always a great indicator whether the story works or not. When I get a picture, when I get an image, when someone is talking about something, then it's probably the good.
Like some of the beautiful pictures you have behind you know, each one of those is a story behind that, I'm sure.
And the interesting thing is, yes, they're the results of coaching processes. It's a
Love that. I
Yeah.
love that.
That's, yeah. So it's a really visual story, and sometimes it helps to just use pen and paper to make things more visible.
Yeah, for sure.
Great. Now, let me ask you that, because your path seems a bit similar to mine, where I worked in corporate for quite a long time, had international roles there, and then decided to move out, become a coach, and I'm also working a lot with mindfulness. My main topic
Yeah,
really
wasn't
is
it?
presence and the autonomic nervous system. So, what was your motivation to work as a coach and to leave corporate?
I love hearing about your path, and we can talk more about that too. I think that's always interesting. I think for me, it really came down to in every role that I've ever had. I started my career working in US politics, and I've had some of senior roles at some of the biggest company names that people have heard of. And in all of those roles, the work that I found that was most rewarding and most inspiring to me was working with leaders, both being a leader and managing a team, but also really helping support senior leaders, not just the CEO and the leader of the whole company, but of really of big teams. And I loved working with them because I can see that the power of bringing people together, motivating and inspiring around a goal or business objective or around a political set of beliefs. And so for me, it was always the work that I just found most inspiring. And I thought, okay, I've been doing this in an informal way through all of the communications jobs I've had, because that's what good communicators often do professionally, is we're advising leaders on what to say, how to say it, when to say it. And I thought, I should actually get some real formal training in this. And it was when I finally went through the formal coaching training and certification that I did many years ago that I realized, oh, I'm not just learning how to do this for other people. I'm actually learning it about myself. I'm learning how to really listen from a place of curiosity, not from my own sort of narrative and my own sort of soundtrack. I'm asking questions. And then when I went back in-house after coaching for several years and I led big teams as I did, I realized that I was bringing more of a coaching approach to leadership. And I think it resonated. I got good results. The data showed that. So it was just really an interesting thing that you realize coaching is about relationships. It's about helping people imagine an inspired future, aligning their values with some broader set of goals and actions that they could take in their life. And all of us are trying to get better. All of these companies are trying to do hard things. If it were easy, we would have figured it out already. So for me, it's the coaching, working with people, helping them to get better. Often there's a communication aspect to it, but really it's about that relational piece. So that's it, really was just more of a continuation of the work that I really love to do and felt like I was getting some good results doing.
And I loved your when you said that this curiosity and really asking question and sitting there and listening for and hearing the answers, that makes a total difference.
Yeah, I think we could use more of that in our world today, generally. Especially the pace that we move at, the tools that all of us we carry around these devices. Our brains never really evolved to really process information and the like as fast. And we've, in a way, gotten away from our ability to really discern what is important and really discern what sort of inside is aligning with values and where do I want to go and how do I want to show up.
And also, sometimes I have the impression that was the turning point in my career when I was traveling a lot and I had a horse at that time, and I had a husband, or I still have that husband from that time. And every time I was somewhere, I was working in a different country, I was at the stable with my horse, I was at home with my husband. I always had the impression that I was not where I would need to be, and this really was wearing me out because I was never really in the present moment. I was always with my thoughts, with my thinking. I was always somewhere else, always trying to tackle problems, issues, challenges. And I never really experienced the moment that I was living.
And it's so interesting because I think that it goes back to what we started our conversation on. It's like people would come to yoga or meditation or this mindfulness presence with the idea of, oh, it's going to help me work more quickly, more efficiently, do more. And it's like that actually is less. So sometimes you got to go slow to go fast. You've got to really be present. Imagine the creativity and the concentration that one can have and the outcome that people can get if they just slow a little bit and pay attention. And I think we've all been in situations where we are trying to multitask or be distracted or we're anticipating the next thing. So wait, what's actually just right in front of me? And I've been on the receiving end of that too. And you're like, hey, was that person even really listening to me? Did they hear me? And then it just doesn't really get good results over time. Yeah, for sure.
And we can sense it. It's so funny
For
because
sure.
when we pretend to listen to others, we always think, yeah, I'm there, and the other person thinks we hear. But we can always sense it. We can always understand whether the other person is really listening or not.
I think in some ways it's one of the double-edged swords of Zoom and remote connection. It's so wonderful that you and I are able to have this conversation that way. And yet, I think it's also made it possible for people to be more distracted and feel like they're half paying attention. and rather than being really present with somebody. So that's one of the reasons why all of the conversations around return to work and being in an office or not is interesting. But especially as people get a little bit later in their careers, the people that I work with, the people I know you work with, it really is about relationships. It's really about connection. And I think that the longer we go in our careers, I always try to advise young people, keep investing in relationships, keep focusing on presence, put your phone down, be present with what's in front of you, because those are the things that are longer term. And those are the ways that you will evolve your career.
And that's what stays. I'm sure you have a lot of connections and relationships with people that you used to work with.
In fact, some of the best connections I have, professional connections that were formed before there was even a thing called an iPhone or Facebook or any of that. And of course, I have great connections from my last job, and I do keep up with coaching clients I still have. But I think, gosh, some of the most formative, powerful professional relationships I have are from, the long ago presence, personal connection. You worked through a hard communications challenge together or whatever.
Now let me come back to your book, honestly speaking.
Honestly speaking.
Without having read it, and I can't expect you to put the whole book in to 5 minutes, but what is the essence? What is one idea you want readers to take away from the book once they've finished it?
I think that it goes back to a little bit of what we touched on at the earlier part of this conversation, which is you need to really be honest with yourself about what am I trying to convey? Why is this conversation hard? What is the main point that I want somebody to hear? And then how do I maximize my chances that they will hear what I want them to hear? So another way of thinking about it is it doesn't matter what you say. All that matters is what people hear. And so my job as a communicator is to try to get the person who's receiving it have the maximal chance that they're going to receive what I want them to receive. I think about it's why the cover of the book is the way that it is. I should find a copy and show it, but it's like a overlapping text bubbles, and I want to maximize the overlap between the two of them. My understanding, your understanding, we're trying to find the maximal overlap. And so in the book, I offer several different short frameworks that people can use to that I've seen over my career work really well for effective communication at work. How do I communicate effectively? Be consistent, be open, be real, be educational. There's a similar framework for how to communicate in your personal life. We talk a lot about the power of listening and of listening, and again, that whole point around curiosity. Talk about that question that we shared earlier around what's my intent? Who's my audience? Talk a lot about how do you understand? It's not just I'm talking to Christine, but what level of knowledge or sophistication or skill is Christine bringing to this conversation? What is she expecting to hear from me? How might she like to receive what I'm trying to convey? Those are the kinds of things that we talk about. And then I just share a bunch of different stories, lessons learned along the way. Around both doing it in an effective corporate setting way, but also again, those mindfulness just ways without even using the yoga language, really about trying to just see ourselves more in other people and around trying to regulate our nervous system so that we are not really reacting from a place of all of our habits and our deep conditioning or reacting from a place of that fight or flight mode. Sort of how do you just regulate yourself so that you maximize the chances that you get to the outcome that you want.
And that's an important point. That's something that is really important also for my work, is to make sure that if you're not coming from a place where your nervous system is regulated, you can never have a really good conversation, because you will not be able to say the things you want to say. It will not come out the way you would like. Usually, when you say something and you're in a stress mode, then you'll regret it after that.
And the people that you work with, do you find that it's both the speaking and the listening, or do you work with people and find that they're challenged by one or one more than the other in those moments?
At the moment, they're most challenged with finding the right words, hear what they have to share. And I think being able to listen and actively listening is one of the things that they go through with me anyway, because to me, that's really fun to be able to do that.
So important. It's so hard because we all bring our stories and our conditioning and our history, conditioning that's rooted in our DNA that isn't even us unlearned. Yeah, for
And
sure. It's
also,
hard.
I think our culture expects us to show up and to demonstrate what we know and what we think. So there is this tendency of, I want to say something, I want to share, I have to if I want to be seen.
Yeah. I also say that I think one of the things that makes this hard is that I believe it's really important to have healthy disagreement on teams and in organizations. That's one of the reasons why diverse perspectives and backgrounds is so important, because I want people to help think about things that I might have thought about in a different way. And I get the best ideas from people who disagree, but we want to disagree in a way that is productive, and the way that we all are like, it's not personal, it's about the facts and the knowledge of what we're trying to work on or a project. And so I think a lot about it. You know, disagreement is not bad. It's actually quite healthy, and it means that people feel honest, that they can be vulnerable. And one of the things I sometimes work on is empathy and connection is really powerful, but when it blurs into the line of, I'm going to start assuming this person's own baggage is my own, and I'm going to get down into the tunnel with them, for example, that's not healthy. And it's not really, boundaries as leaders is really important. And so that balance around being with somebody, helping them feel supported, helping them feel seen and heard, using the like that language, but also not getting down into the trenches with them such that you can't pull yourself out and lead other people on the team or have a broader perspective is something that's important. So I see it going both ways at times.
Yeah, and I think that reminds me of Brené Brown, who describes that difference between being sympathetic and empathetic. Yeah, totally agree.
Big fan of hers. Yeah, for sure. She's informed a lot of my work as well. Yeah.
So let me ask you a very broad question, Andrew. What is your
Sure.
vision?
My vision. I think my vision for at least my work and the work that I'm hoping to share is that I always have wanted to try to make the world better in some way. And that's why I started my career working in public service. And I think I've evolved over time thinking about wanting to work with individuals and people, maybe in organizations trying to make a difference for sure, but also helping people be their best selves, whether they're a leader of an organization whose mission I believe in, or whether it's helping people on a team be better. I really feel like the vision for myself is to try to help people be the best communicators, the best, you know, that they can be, and help organizations function in the best way possible. The work that I do with teams is almost all around how to be high performing and work effectively as a team. How do we make sure that we're having that healthy disagreement? How do we make sure that we're aligned around a common way of working, all in service of a mission that we are here to work on and to meet? So the vision is just helping people be better communicators, be better professionals.
And having a better, creating a better relationship through that, I'm hearing you
For
say.
sure. For sure. Yeah. I absolutely, yeah. I think that's just, I see communications as a relational exercise for sure.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for this communication and this.
Thank you. I've so enjoyed it. I just really thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.
This was Lead Well. Now, what is the one thing that you're taking away from this episode? Please share in the comments below and do share the podcast with your friends and family, but only if you like it.